Welcome to another episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dakiel, and today my guest is Mike Prada. He's the editor of SB Nation, as well as the co-host of the Limited Upside Podcast, and also puts together Prada's Pictures. We talked trade deadline, we got into the MVP race, we talked Lakers, we talked Draymond Green. You ready to tip it off? Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm running on fumes a little bit, but that always happens this time of year. Even when there aren't that many trades, that's the day for you.
Think about it this way. Even though you have to cover the NBA and you're rolling through it all, just think how tired the executives are.
Oh, yeah. I would never argue that I am in better shape right now than Danny Ainge.
Well, I mean, we saw what Vlade looked like at the end of the Cousins trade.
Yeah.
But since we're there now, let's talk about the trade deadline. Your biggest winner at the trade deadline, who do you got?
I think New Orleans. It's got to be New Orleans. I mean, I'm not sure that Davis and Cousins will work. I have questions about that. But you look at where New Orleans was before this, and they had absolutely no room to build the kind of team that they needed to build around Anthony Davis. You know, they had no really good future assets. They squandered draft picks. They paid all this money to guys who were not that great last summer. They had no real cap flexibility. You know, if you were to sketch a path for that team to contend, like, what would it have possibly been? And then, you know, say what you want about Cousins and say what you want about how this could blow up in their faces. But now they have a roadmap. They actually gave Anthony Davis his second star. So they're the clear winners, I think, by far. I don't think anyone really comes close.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, hands down, they're definitely the clear winners. They made a move. Who knows if it's going to work out? You definitely touched on that. I wrote a little piece on my blog, so this is perfect. I love that you said that, because this is a great way for me to kind of pump up my blog for a second. But I wrote a nice...
Excellent. Glad to tee you up.
On my own podcast, too. This is definitely, like, just total narcissism at its best. I wrote a piece on Alvin Gentry, kind of how he could use those guys, and it's more kind of related to the past of, you know, the stuff he's done with his Phoenix offenses, you know, some of the stuff we did with the Clippers when he was an assistant there and I was a video guy there. And I think there's going to be a couple of interesting wrinkles. And sure enough, the second play last night, they ran one of the plays. So I got super excited.
Yeah. You know Alvin better than me, obviously. You worked with him. But I don't know. From afar, I'm a little worried about this fit. I just, when you think about the pressure that they're under to win, that is not a patient organization. When you think about what he's done in the past stylistically with Phoenix, I would think that this might be a little bit tricky, and especially also to do it in the middle of the season where you're not going to get a lot of practice time. But you know Alvin better than me. I mean, do you think this will work out with him?
I think in the long run, I think it's hard. A big trade like this in the middle of the season is just, it's really tough, you know, unless you have a guy that's just perfectly plug and play. And this is going to be a tough one that you can't just automatically plug Cousins in and they'll figure it out. It's going to take them a while to get it figured out. The other thing that doesn't get talked about a lot, this dude's going to get suspended. He's going to get another technical, right? You know, like, how many games is he going to miss? Like, if they're looking at it going, like, we should absolutely make the playoffs now, then I'm concerned. Because I don't know if they're going to catch Denver in that situation, just because they got a tough schedule. They got still trying to figure out Cousins and plugging all that together. So I'm not sure exactly how it'll all come together. But I think Alvin's a good coach. He's a great personality. He gets along with guys. You don't hear stuff about guys really having problems with Coach Gentry. So I think personality-wise, you know, he's going to do well with Cousins. I think they have a better chance next year if they really just kind of give Cousins the stability. They made a move. It's a big move. You got to give both, you know, Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry at least a full training camp in a year to kind of put everything together. They still need to add more shooters. I just read, like, Caspi broke his hand yesterday, so that's going to hurt.
You know, that was Pelicans' luck for you right there. I mean, he would have been a key player for them, I think, too, because he can shoot the ball. So that's a loss. And the perimeter is a little barren. You know, you got I always kind of like Solomon Hill, but definitely not playing great in offense. He's shooting a little bit better, but that's not a great fit. I don't think Jrue Holiday is a particularly great three-point shooter. And yeah, Cousins and Davis can shoot the ball, but they can shoot their open shots stretched against centers. You know, one of them is going to now have to stretch a little bit against a smaller player. And I don't know, that I think is going to be really tricky for them to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna take time. So I don't expect them to automatically make the playoffs this year. But I think give them the summer, give them a training camp.
But that might be the only one you get. I mean, Cousins is a free agent after next year. So, I mean, that's the other – I mean, not to say that they shouldn't have made the move, but that's the other, I think, thing to be worried about is that, yeah, they need some time to come together, but I don't know how much time they really have.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that, but the other thing I look at it too is they gave up so little for him. Like, it's not going to kill you. It's not like when you look at it – when we look at teams that like Noel gets traded – you know, and everybody looks and goes like, we gave up Jrue Holiday and all of these things and to just get back second round picks, you know, or, you know, I'm not sure what, I don't remember what the Bulls gave up for McDermott, but.
It was two first round picks and they took on a bad contract.
Yeah. And then now they gave him up for Cameron Payne. Like, that doesn't really move the needle. So it's like, I don't feel like if Cousins left, when we look back at it, we're going to be like, they gave up Buddy Hield, who still might become a player, and then that's
it. The next Steph Curry right there. That's who he is. The next Steph. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's a no-brainer, make the trade. I'll believe it works when I see it, and their first game was not a great omen, even though they played well. You don't want to lose by 30 points at home when you're fighting for the playoffs. So again, though, there was no path to do anything productive without making this trade, so they're still the clear winners. It will just be interesting to see how this works.
Right, I agree with you on that. So another winner I have, and we kind of touched on it, is the Mavericks getting Noel. You know, at least in my book, they get a guy, they can try to put him in the mold of Tyson Chandler. They can try to build him up in that regards. Of course, they're going to have to pay him this summer, which is why Philly did the trade. I don't think they had any intentions of paying him and keeping him and matching any contract. What are your thoughts on that trade?
It's a great move for Dallas when you consider that they weren't going to be able to get a guy of that talent any other way. They didn't give up much of anything. You know, Justin Anderson is not even playing. He lost minutes to an undrafted rookie. And that first-round pick is really a fake first-round pick. As an aside, I'm not really sure like why the Sixers were insistent on a top 18 first-round protected pick. Like, did they just want to make it sound like they made a better trade? Like, you know that the Mavericks are not going to finish with, even if they make the playoffs, they'll be 15th in the lottery. That was a weird one. Why not just say you got what you got?
Well, because like my first reaction when I saw the trade, I was like, oh, they got the first round pick. Okay, cool. And then somebody's like, watch for the protections. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah. And then you would think it would work the other way, right? Like, okay, maybe this year it's not protected because the Mavs want to keep their spot in this draft, but it'll get better in the future. And then, no, it doesn't. I mean, that was weird. Like, that was almost like he cared more about the optics. But I don't know. The Noel will work out, I think, pretty well. I am optimistic about him. I have some concerns, but I think when you consider the value, and I'm also not totally convinced he's going to get a huge contract this summer. You know, if nobody was willing to offer more than this to get him, why would they suddenly bang down Dallas's door to kind of try to overpay to steal him away? I don't really follow the logic there.
Well, I think the way I look at it is, teams weren't giving him the offer, giving them good trade offers because they feel like he's going to get a good offer this summer. You got to remember, Sean Marks is floating around, and he offered Alan Crabb a bunch of money that Portland matched. You know, he's going to be making plays, you know, and that might be a guy they go after.
Yeah, but if you're Sean Marks and you actually want him, right? You're not just kind of messing around and just fucking the market. You actually want him. Like, presumably he wanted Alan Crabb. Right. He wasn't just doing that to screw the Blazers over.
No, absolutely.
If that's the price, why not just kind of trade for him yourself and then you control that process and you actually have a much better chance of keeping him? Like, why wouldn't you just do that?
I think then that kind of comes to asset control. Like, especially Brooklyn of all teams, they really shouldn't be trading picks, whether first or second round. Like, they need to hold on to, I mean, I don't even know what, if they have second round picks, but they need to just kind of look, keep that asset going and kind of put teams in a decision, you know? And I think that's kind of what they did with Crab. You're 100% right. They're not offering these guys just to fuck around with the market. They're offering these guys because they think they can play and want them on their roster. But I think that's kind of the situation. You know, they also put those teams in a decision where it's like, okay, well, now you have to figure out what you want to do. I think Dallas traded for him, and Dallas is going to give him, is going to match whatever offer he gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just, we'll see. I'm not totally convinced it will be that onerous of an offer. But if that's the case, that's an even better trade for Dallas then.
Yeah. The one part I kind of find funny is, and I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but if Justin Anderson turns into a player, this is going to be the second wing player they've traded that turned into something after they lost Crowder, and they're just going to get killed for this.
Yeah. I am skeptical, but we will see. That's true. It's not just the second. There are others, right? I can't remember them off the top of my head, but this does feel like a pattern with their guys. And from what I understand, I think Anderson was having trouble picking up the playbook, and Carlisle, as you know, has a very long stacked playbook. So that is not something that is unique to players like Justin Anderson. But I'm until he can shoot the ball, I'm still not convinced. But then again, I guess you're right. We did say these things about Crowder in the past.
Yeah, you never know how guys kind of turn out. I did look at his stats, and when I saw his 3-point percentage, I was like, whoa, that's terrible. But then noticed he went from 26% last year to 30% this year. You know, obviously these things are incremental, and I'm not saying he's going to become a reliable three-point threat, but if he slowly builds that up, who knows? Who's your biggest loser in the trade deadline?
I mean, I assume other than Sacramento, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're just perennial losers. I mean, that's just where they live.
Yeah. Biggest loser, I thought Philly didn't do well with how they handled the Noel situation, but I don't know if that's a biggest loser right now or sort of what they've done the last 9 months. That I think they lose in there. I'm not sure the Celtics are a loser, but I'm curious what you think about like the fact that they again couldn't pull off the mega move.
I don't look at them in a way where everybody's like, oh, he's just coveting his assets. Now, to be fair, just because I'm a jerk, I did tweet out a picture of Gollum from Lord of the Rings holding up a ring and said Danny Ainge with his assets.
Yeah.
But that was just me being a little bit of a jerk. I actually think, you know, they're smart to try to protect their assets and not give up too much. You know, I think I'd prefer Paul George over Jimmy Butler just because I think Paul George fits into a second option. And you guys actually touched on it a bit today in your podcast with Whitney. You know, and talking about that, I think, you know, he slides in really well for them there. I think the price gets cheaper.
I agree. The only thing I would be a little concerned about with them is that in 16 months, Isaiah Thomas is going to want a raise. And the other thing I would be a little bit worried about is that this draft pick that they're going to get, unless they trade it on draft night, the best prospects are point guards. So I think that's a little bit of a tricky situation. And then you have Horford, who probably is getting worse from here, not better. So it's a little complicated. If I'm asking you for like a real loser, I think then you have to look at Chicago, because maybe there's something they see in Cameron Payne that I don't, but I'm really struggling to figure that trade out.
I don't know what Chicago is doing. Like, I honestly thought, you know, if they were going to make any trades, it was going to be a flurry of trades. I figured they were just going to blow the whole thing up in one day. It was Butler was going to go to Boston. You know, the Gibson and McDermott play trade, I figured it makes sense. And they would have traded for Okafor. I mean, I thought there would have been a bunch of moves with that. So when the only move they made was trading out Taj Gibson, who is the heart and soul of the Chicago locker room from everything I've heard, and McDermott, I kind of was just like, I have no idea what the hell you guys are doing. And for just such a little return in that sense, like, I just don't know what they're doing. Like, they're as lost to me as the Sacramento Kings. It's, we have like three or four franchises where I just look at them and I go like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah, it sounds like there's competing agendas in their front office. And you know this from working for a team, like when that happens, you get something that doesn't really add up with the sum of their parts. I'm going to see if I can try to play devil's advocate on Chicago the best I can and see if the logic even works out at all. I guess Taj was probably leaving. This is essentially, I guess, two trades they made. One is Taj Gibson for Joffrey Laverne. And for some reason, they tossed a second round pick in there, too. I don't really get that. At least Laverne is under contract for longer. And then it's McDermott for Cameron Payne. And I still don't know, like, what the Bulls see in Cameron Payne. Like, I guess they think he might be their point guard of the future. And it is hard to get point guards, you know, in this league, as especially now. It's like you look at the price of some of these guys, and you kind of need – you do need one at this point. I don't think there's too many teams – yeah, you can get by sometimes, but you need a starting line point guard. And if Cameron Payne develops into that player, they have traded one guy as an impending free agent and one guy who wasn't working out, and they got their point guard of the future. I just don't think Cameron Payne is their point guard of the future. You know, 2 foot surgeries already, and he hasn't exactly shown so much – as a player, I don't really know how that can work. I mean, that's the charitable reading of that trade.
Right. I think that's kind of the way you look at it. I wonder if they're looking at Cameron Payne going like, hey, Reggie Jackson kind of lit it up once he left Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Congratulations. You have the next Reggie Jackson who the Pistons were trying to give away this trade deadline.
Absolutely. That was amazing. That stuff's kind of nuts to me. And it's the Bulls getting another point guard who can't shoot.
They collect those quite nicely. I mean, is he even better than Jerian Grant? He's younger. Is he better? Like, I'm not sure he's better.
I mean, to be fair, I did last year, like in his rookie year, I thought Cameron Payne like could have been a really good backup for Oklahoma City, except they just never really. He got injured, then he came back, and they never played him again. And he got buried in the bench behind. God, was it Randy Foy that they had?
Yeah. They started playing Foy with Durant as the lead ball handler, I believe.
Yeah, and I was just kind of like, this is silly. Like, develop the kid, or at least see what he has in his rookie year. He wasn't too bad to start the year, but, man, it got a lot tougher. Here's another question for you, kind of related to this trade. Is Taj Gibson going to hurt Russell Westbrook's chances at a triple-double? Because I think he will. I don't think he's going to get as many rebounds with Gibson on the floor.
No, I think Gibson's going to get the message and start boxing out so Wes can swoop in. I think it's another boxer outer for them.
Well, listen, as that's a Trojan working with a Bruin, and as a former Trojan, I don't know if I can allow this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, maybe you put Taj on the bench and stick him out of the Westbrook units. That's a very good point.
No, I just find it funny. I'm curious. I think Taj is going to just end up gobbling a couple extra rebounds that, or take the one or two away that Westbrook really needs, and that ends his camp, his MVP campaign to me. If he's not averaging a triple double, he cannot be the MVP. That's my only.
Okay, can we stop and talk about that for a second? I find this to be bizarre, right? Not your opinion necessarily, but just this whole idea. If he averages 9.5 rebounds per game. If you just take away all the uncontested rebounds, and maybe he's averaging 9 rebounds a game, he's still having an incredible statistical season, right? Why does it matter that he gets to the double-digit mark on the triple-doubles? And for that matter, like, why does it suddenly change the season for the better if he has double-digit rebounds? Like, I don't really understand this fascination.
Well, my argument against that is because his team is not going to have a lot of wins. They're going to get into the 7th seed, you know, and all of that. These other guys who are, you know, Harden's in the MVP race. He has his team at, you know, 3rd in the West. You know, obviously LeBron. He's phenomenal. Kawhi Leonard's having a great year, and he's doing it on both ends of the floor. Team 2nd in the West. They're going to have a ton of wins. I get killed for this all the time, but I think Isaiah should be in the conversation for MVP. Mm-hmm. I don't think he should win it, and I'm going to say it again because everybody thinks I'm saying Isaiah should win it.
I'm not there. Until defensively, it's just I can't support that one. I've heard that before, so I understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like it comes down to at a certain point, it's wins, you know. And I got into a long conversation with somebody else about it, the Isaiah thing in particular, you know, saying like his numbers are worse than Rubio and Goran Dragic. I was like, yeah, but he has more wins.
Well, it is, yeah, it is a team sport, but I see what you're saying with the wins argument. I guess this isn't really a commentary on what you're saying. It's more just commentary on everything. Like, if he grabs 10 fewer rebounds this season, suddenly we can't assume West, you know, put Russ in the MVP case because he'll be at 9.9 rebounds. You know what I mean?
If it weren't
there's something
so many,
about the round number.
If there weren't so many cases, like this has been a weird MVP sort of thing, just because there's so many different cases of guys you can talk about. I mean, even Steph Curry's lighting it up now. So now you have, I think personally, KD and Curry should cancel each other out because they both make it easier for each other. But they're both putting up crazy numbers. Like, this is the most efficient season Durant's ever had. Like, there's so many cases. That's why it's hard to me of, like, how is Westbrook going to stand out? And then him having the triple-double. And maybe I might change my mind. You know, I'm kind of wishy-washy in that way. But, you know, him having the triple-double to me was kind of like, I can get behind that because that's something nobody's done since Oscar Robertson.
Right. Yeah, it's this more a commentary on our fascination with big round numbers, because I don't really think his season would be any less impressive or any more impressive if he had 10 more or 10 fewer rebounds or whatever the difference is between 10.1 rebounds per game and like 9.7 rebounds per game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree with you on that. I definitely agree with you. It's definitely a fascination with round numbers. I've fallen into the trap. It's not even I will acknowledge that I am a sucker when I go shopping and I see something. Ooh, I want that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a reason they're listed at 199 instead of 201.
Right. And I'm like, oh, $2. Great. 201. Not so much.
Yep.
I'm that guy. I'm sorry.
You're not alone. And look, it would be an amazing accomplishment. I was just thought of it. I just think it's funny.
I
human nature is funny.
Yes, very much so. And that's why there's people making tons of money in the marketing department on how to, how to predict on that one. It would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the Lakers and the crazy week they've had.
Yeah.
What did you think?
That's been interesting.
Yeah. What did you think with Magic Johnson? Basically, goodbye, Mitch. Goodbye, Jim. I'm taking over. Then bringing in Rob Pelinka. What are your thoughts there?
Well, to me, this really shows that, I mean, they've been planning to do this for a while. You know, you don't just suddenly have a general manager 24 hours after you take over, right? There obviously was some stuff. I mean, Magic was saying in the press, like, yeah, I want full basketball control. Like, the only weird thing about this, honestly, when you strip it all away, is just the timing of it, right? It's just 2 days before the deadline we're going to announce this. Because Boston Kupchak, you look at the Lakers' record, there is a legit case to say that they have not performed as they should. And you know, I know they've had a lot of challenges with that, but, you know, the idea of getting rid of those guys and finding someone new and, you know, Magic brings the gravitas that the Lakers need, like, that's not a weird idea. It's the only thing that's strange about it is that it happened 2 days before the deadline, because we don't know how good an executive Magic is as a basketball player. I think the record is mixed there. I don't think his tweets are a really good illustration of his intelligence. But it's just that, if you assume that like this was kind of already in the works for a while and it's not just like, oh, hey, suddenly we're going to have a new front office on 2 days before the deadline, then it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely had to have been in the works, just because, you know, in order for Rob Pelinka to take over, he has to divest himself from his own agency. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that's done in the 8 hours. You know, that was something that was in process. Now, it might have been something that started to come together over All-Star Weekend, and then he started doing, I don't know how long that stuff takes, but that's something that definitely kind of takes some time. My biggest concern is, you know, Pelinka's been in it. He's gone through it, and this is kind of the Bob Myers sort of model, except the one thing everybody kind of forgets about Bob Myers is he started out as an assistant GM with Golden State for a year and had to kind of learn a little bit, you know, and Pelinka's been through a lot. He knows a lot of stuff, but it's you got to learn how to work the trades and all of that. So I think there's a bit of a learning curve there. I think Magic can do a great job if he puts the right people around him and he listens. personally, if I were the Lakers or if I were Magic situation, at the very least, I'd bring Sam Hinkie on as a consultant.
Yeah.
Or just somebody I can call and just be like, what do you think of this? We're thinking of doing this. Even if Hinkie never steps foot in L.A., just have him as a consultant from a distance. That might even be a better view of somebody completely separated who can kind of chime in on without having to hear a whole bunch of like biased opinions.
So Hinkie as the Lakers Jerry West. That would be very ironic.
Yeah.
there's a fair concerns. It's just I have no idea how it's going to work out. And the Lakers needed a change, I think. So, like, would we feel any weirder about this whole thing if it happened 3 months from now or 3 months sooner? I don't know. I think it's just that it happened 2 days before the trade deadline that everyone's kind of in a tiff over it.
Yeah, I was actually concerned when Magic was making the promotional tour of I should be the guy in charge, just because I was like, I've never seen a front office guy do this.
Yeah, I mean, that was weird. The timing is definitely weird, and that was bizarre. And if I'm Boston Kupchak, I'm a little upset at that because that was sort of very awkward for them, I'm sure. I agree with that. I mean, that was weird. That was weird. But, you know, the Lakers always have to throw in a dose of soap opera to everything they do.
Right. Absolutely. That's the Hollywood script. That's what we do here. Last thing I want to ask you about, and then I'll let you go. I know we're a bit pressed for time. Did you get a chance? Have you seen the Paul Pierce, Draymond Green, or heard about the little tiff that happened yesterday?
I saw what happened. I didn't see it live. So I had the game still on DVR. But yeah, I heard about it.
I love Draymond as a heel, as a villain.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how anybody, like, I started seeing people on Twitter saying, like, you can't disrespect Paul Pierce. You can't do this. And I was like, no. This is why wrestling's so big in this country. We need a bad guy. We need a guy we love to hate. And I don't love this. I don't hate this dude. I love Draymond for what he brings.
Well, we're all participating in a soap opera. That's what the NBA is. And it's just disguised with basketball sort of as the pretext. You know, it's no different than your favorite TV show. So there are always going to be people doing unpredictable things. I think Draymond has started to own it a little bit more than he did in the past. And, you know, that was sort of the thing. Like, the Warriors were sort of not owning it as much as they have been this year. I think that's what's made that a little more fun. But look, you know, we are both huge basketball nerds, but I don't think either of us would still be into this whole thing if it wasn't for the personalities.
Right. I think that plays such a big role into it. Cool. Well, Mike, I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Tell the people where they can find you. Tell them how they can read you. I love Pray to videos, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The latest one is on your guy, Isaiah Thomas, and how the Celtics make life a little easier for him to score all those incredible points that he does. So you can check that out. It's pinned to my Twitter profile page. Check out all of SB Nation NBA stuff, sbnation.com/NBA. Should also listen to the Limited Upside podcast, including the episode where Mo himself came on to break down the Warriors Cavaliers Christmas thriller. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that nerdy basketball podcast. So you can subscribe to that. And I'm on Twitter at Mike Prada SBN. It's spelled like the Italian company, but not pronounced that way.
And there's going to be a link to the Prada videos when I put up this podcast. Make sure to check that stuff out. I had a great time when we got to talk Warriors.
Yeah, it was a great podcast. It was a lot of fun. We'll have to do probably that again once the playoffs roll around, and then we have many more matchup things to talk about.
As we discussed, I have plenty of time. Well, Mike, thank you again so much for jumping on.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I was going to see if I got the thanks for having you quote.
I'm sorry. You want it?
No, you just did it. You just did it.
You can dub it in. You can edit it in.
No, you just did it. I'm happy. I'm going home.
Good. Okay.
I think you just you say it so effortlessly that it just kind of you didn't even realize you did it. I was sitting there the whole time going like, am I going to get that or am I not?
It is sort of an instinct, right? Yeah. It's sort of like something you have to say.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to understand the context of that joke, you have to go to the podcast when I was on the Limited Upside.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
that's how that whole thing broke
that's
out.
That's right.
thanks again, Mike. That's our show this week. It was a bite-sized one, but I hope you really enjoyed it. Be sure to rate us, like us, and leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Have yourselves a great weekend.